Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Adam Rennie. I'm the host of the One Thing podcast. Welcome to episode number 100. We are so excited to make it to episode number 100. Thanks to all of you for being loyal listeners and helping support the podcast that launched in 2019. It's very exciting to be here. And this episode is especially interesting for me and hopefully for you. We welcome on Leo Grady and Jacqueline Kwas. Leo is the CEO of Jonah Health, and Jacqueline Kwas heads up business development for Jonah Health. And Jonah Health is doing a very interesting thing. They're taking AI and applying it towards the study of the gut microbiome. They have a direct-to-consumer company that uses stool analysis and studying the microbiome within various stool samples and cross-referencing it with the latest evidence through AI technology and applying the research to recommendations to help with health issues. We dove deeply into this topic and understanding how AI interfaces with these gut microbiome applications, and we discussed some various factors that are involved with gut microbiome health. We studied the trajectory of stool analysis, where it started, where it is today, and where it's headed. We looked at various components of stool testing, such as metabolomics and microbiome testing. And really, it was fascinating to learn how deeply this company is applying evidence towards their work. They are not making any sweeping claims. They're really growing with the research. It's fascinating to know that over 2,000 studies come out per month on the microbiome, and no one in their right mind could keep up with the research as it's being turned out. So this technology really helps with making sure that we're applying the latest evidence towards our interpretation of microbiome analytes and microbiome testing. So I think you'll enjoy this discussion as much as I did. And please share this with anybody who is really looking to understand how to study the microbiome and use microbiome data to improve their health. So without further ado, I welcome you to episode 100 of the One Thing podcast.
This is the One Thing podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Adam Rindy. The One Thing podcast brings together leaders in functional and naturopathic medicine to discuss actionable information that may unlock puzzles in the areas of gut health, brain health, metabolism, and longevity. Please note, these episodes do not replace the opinion of your doctor. They are not intended to diagnose or treat any condition. Please discuss this information with your provider and discuss your own unique personal health history before adapting this information. Please subscribe to our episodes so that you can stay on top of the most current information in these areas of medicine.
Jacqueline and Leo, welcome to the One Thing podcast. It's great to have you on here today.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. It's great getting to know you a little bit before we discuss today's topic and just getting into our conversation. And I think, you know, it'd be a great place to start is just to kind of hear about Jonah and the company's mission and kind of what you're out to accomplish with the people you're serving, and just hear a little bit of background on Jonah.
Sure. So I'm Leo. I founded the company about 18 months ago. My background before Jonah was in AI. So I did my PhD in AI 20 years ago, spent my career in more conventional medicine, building AI in radiology, cardiology, and pathology. I was on the investor side for a bit and then founded Jonah. And the reason for founding Jonah is because the microbiome is so integral to your health. The science has been really exciting, showing that the microbiome has been connected to every GI disorder, autoimmune condition, metabolic disease, obesity, liver disease, but also cancer and Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's and depression, anxiety, all have been linked with the microbiome. And yet it feels like there's so much science and there's so much complexity here that the only way we're really going to make sense of it all and really be able to take advantage of the microbiome is by using a technology like AI to decode what's going on in the microbiome and really chart a path for not only analyzing where you are today, but where you want to be and how to get you there. On a personal level, I've had a number of members of my family with a variety of different GI disorders. My ex-wife has Crohn's disease. My sister's got colitis. My cousin has celiac. My son has undefined GI issues. And so I've really seen their journey and their struggle with trying to understand what was going on in their health. And all of these roads always point back to the microbiome as a missing piece and trying to understand it. And even though they've gotten great care over the years, it often takes a long time to get a diagnosis. And then even with a diagnosis, trying to understand a personalized guidance on what you can eat, what choices you can make to help you manage your symptoms and feel better can be very difficult.
Very interesting. Just hearing your background, it makes me think like the early days of radiology to where you took radiology. It seems like the study of the microbiome or even study of the digestive tract through like stool samples may parallel kind of a similar track that it's headed. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. If you think about the early days of radiology, it was really x-ray. And x-ray was phenomenal when it was developed, but it was limited in what you could see. Right? You couldn't see in three dimensions. You couldn't see soft tissue. You couldn't really understand what was going on in a person's body. And so it was only through the development of, computed tomography, CT, CAT scans, MRI, and then all the different forms of these with contrast agents and different pulse sequences that we're really able to interrogate the body. And I think you're right about the parallel with radiology, because people do talk about the microbiome and say it's a new organ, right? But if it's a new organ, it's really not an organ like a kidney or a heart or something that you can image with an MRI. It's effectively an organ of data. And so one of the things that we talk about at Jonah is how do we build the MRI of this new organ to really be able to understand it from multiple different angles, understand what's wrong with it, and then ultimately how we can fix it.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the intimidating aspects of the microbiome versus, something like static, like a physical structure in the body, say like looking at a shoulder joint or looking at a bone. It seems intimidating for even scientists about the fact that the microbiome is like a moving target in a lot of ways. Is that how you see it?
I think you can look at it from the standpoint of being intimidated by the challenge of dealing with it. I think there's another way of looking at it too, which is there's an opportunity to change it, right? So the fact that it can change means that if we really understand how to change it, that there are real opportunities to fix it and to address somebody's health. I think that's one of the things that's so exciting about the microbiome for me. I mean, you look at fecal transplants, and sometimes they can actually cure somebody's disease, like a chronic condition. Other times they don't have any effect. Other times people have gotten really sick or even died through fecal transplants. And what that tells me is that this is very powerful stuff, but we don't understand it. And I think by really being able to analyze what's going on in the microbiome, understand what's wrong, know where we want to bring it to, and then how to get it from here to there, from state A to state B, I think that's going to be extraordinarily powerful in helping address disease in a way that's done safely.
Yeah. So for people who, kind of looking back at the origins of stool testing and to where we are today and where we're going, like comparing stool cultures to even the early days of microbiome testing, can you kind of walk us through that continuum and where that's headed? Is it sort of the old days seem rather archaic, but yet still there are still some applications of some of those old lab tests and cultures and those types of things. So, it's not like we can move on completely from some of those old studies, but can you just walk us through from where we were and where we're going?
Yeah. So if you think about the earliest descriptions of the microbiome, they were at the time that the microscope was invented, right? I mean, that was the first time someone could visually see rods and spheres and all the different types of bacteria and microorganisms. And through culturing and the germ theory and the development of a modern understanding of infectious disease, we started to realize how certain infections were really behind different diseases. And then through the invention of antibiotics and widespread application of those, then we were able to cure a lot of diseases that previously had plagued humanity. At the same time, there was a growing recognition that all germs weren't bad. All microbes weren't bad. And again, through the kind of culturing studies that you're talking about, we were able to culture some of these organisms and start to draw connections between these organisms and health. And, you know, even whatever, 50 to 100 years ago, people started talking about the clean hypothesis and probiotics and, you know, overuse of antibiotics can actually cause problems. And, you know, there've been a lot of studies on this. But it was very difficult to actually study all these organisms through culturing because your colon is an anaerobic environment. And so once you actually pull these organisms out, trying to study them through culturing is very difficult. We don't even know what medium to grow them in. The conditions very different than your colon. So it wasn't really until genomic sequencing became widespread and possible that we could start to understand these organisms without having to keep them alive and feed them. And, you know, the initial capability to do that was with the advent of 16S sequencing and bacteria. And that advanced the field quite a bit in the late 2000s, early, you know, 2010s. You know, the challenge there was that it was still expensive and it was, you know, limited in its resolution. So you could really see the bacteria down to a genus level, rarely a species level, and almost never a strain level. In addition, because 16S is a component of the bacterial DNA, you weren't able to adequately measure fungus or protists or archaea or viruses or anything like that with this technique as well. You know, shotgun metagenomic sequencing was developed, you know, around that time, or it goes back even earlier actually, but the costs were prohibitive. And with the continued decrease in cost for sequencing, it's become more and more capable to actually sequence these organisms at scale. We've had better and better databases to match the DNA against. And so we really have had a renaissance of our ability to measure all of these organisms, to match their DNA against databases, understand what species, genus, strain they're in, and then to be able to connect that to health outcomes. And, you know, remember, the amount of DNA in your microbiome is about 1,000 times the DNA in your human cells. So there's a lot to sequence there. And so the fact that these costs have come down, the field has matured, we've seen this real flourishing of studies where today we have every month about 2,000 papers published on the microbiome in PubMed.
2,000. Wow.
And growing.
No wonder I'm having troubles keeping up. That's amazing.
And you'll see too, Adam, that there's kind of currently right now, there's kind of two sides of the coin for testing and stool testing. You have qPCR. And the way I like to describe that is you're going in with a certain set list of organisms, whether it's 20 or 30 pathogens that you're really looking for. And you're saying, is it there? Is it not there? And picking it up. With shotgun sequencing, you're kind of going in blind and not having a, you know, a biased list of what you're looking for. You can pick up to hundreds to thousands of different organisms based on what's there. So you get a lot more comprehensive view of what's going on in the gut. But with that, now you have a longer list of organisms to work with and understand. So it adds a little level of complexity if you don't have the proper tools to interpret it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. Having been on the other end of like getting this volume of really cool data and, you know, trying to make sense of it is a daunting task, especially since, like you said, like 2000 studies coming out, you know, on a blink of an eye, you know, it's like you could be well behind the eight ball, like within days. So that's a really good point, Jacqueline. So I'd love to hear how you entered this world too. Like, is it really fascinating to me how people get into this profession of, you know, this world of solving complex chronic illness?
Yeah, definitely. So I've always been interested in healthcare and preventing and treating disease. It's just been a general interest of mine. I started off my career in biomedical engineering. So coming at it from the technology approach, I was working at Medtronic for a while, designing cardiovascular devices. So really treating and creating devices that for people that have heart attacks, hypertension, kind of the full gamut. And really loved the building and creating, but wanted to understand and help decide what we build next and get closer to the patient and consumer as well as a provider. So kind of pivoted and went to the business route, went to grad school for business and focusing a lot on healthcare as well as software. I felt like software was the future to be able to commercialize quicker, be able to reach a lot more people faster and make a difference. And so I dabbled in a lot of different health tech and AI startups with the lens of preventing and treating disease. I joined Jonah back in the early days, back in the fall of 22, when Leo was announcing that he was starting his own stealth company, and it was provider and consumer facing, was health tech, AI, and it was centered around around like prevention of disease. Like, this is kind of the combination of everything that I was super interested in. So essentially I reached out to him and said if he's looking for kind of a MBA intern at the time, and kind of went from there. And since then, we really hired a lot more people full time, built technology, built the product, and launched last year. So it's been a lot seeing from zero to one, but it's impressive to see how quickly everything came together.
That's very cool. Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because my early interface with AI in healthcare really was from this website called Cite AI. And it started uploading sort of notebooks of papers that I didn't have time to read, and chatting with those papers, basically asking questions like I'm talking to the author. And, you know, I'd say like gave me like this felt like a superpower all of a sudden, you know, of knowing, oh, wow, I'm extracting data that's really applicable. But also this uneasiness of like, well, you know, I should really be sitting down and reading these papers word for word and struggling through them like I have, you know, throughout my career. And so, you know, I realized there was kind of like this checks and balances of that approach. And then I learned about you guys and what you're doing. And I was like, wow, hearing about the AI component, because I mean, obviously there's been companies that have been looking at the microbiome and giving us these interpretive guides and, you know, sort of trying to make sense of the data, but you're taking it to a different level. And I'd love to kind of sort of discuss the AI component and how that works within this setting.
Yeah, I'd love to. So, you know, as we talked about, shotgun metagenomics sequencing is great. As Jacqueline mentioned, it's an unbiased look at what's in your gut. So it's not a PCR test, it's not a fixed panel. It's really looking at all the bacteria, the fungus, the viruses, everything in your gut down to a strain level. The challenge is these 2,000 papers every month, right? And when you read one of these papers, for example, you look at a paper on obesity, it's not like there's one organism when it's too high or too low is linked with obesity. It's a whole ecosystem that's linked with obesity. And it's not just obesity. I mean, if you look at Parkinson's or cancer or Crohn's disease or colitis or any of these things, IBS, they're all different ecosystem shifts. And so the study is, even the results are complex. And then if you are trying to look for these signatures in somebody's microbiome, it's very difficult to take advantage of all these papers or different cohorts, different sizes. You have to put them all together. And then, as we talked about before, you can actually change the microbiome through diet, lifestyle, supplements, drugs, medications. And as a result, you know, each of those interventions is also complex. You go vegan, it shifts your microbiome in a totally different way than if you go keto or you're carnivore or you cut out gluten or whatever it is. And it's not just a simple change. And so it's one thing to get the shotgun metagenomics and get all this rich information about a person's microbiome, but how do you leverage all of that science to really understand it, to analyze it, and then to also figure out what to do about it, right? So here's what we built at Jonah. We built a dedicated AI system that reads all of that literature, matches the patterns in your microbiome to every study that's ever been published, so that we can say for you, your microbiome fits the profile of diabetes or depression or cancer, or maybe just bloating and fatigue, brain fog, whatever it is. And then the AI will cite the studies, tell you how much evidence there is, link you to the studies so you can go read them yourself. But then the AI also reads all the interventional literature, diet, lifestyle, supplements, medications, and applies each one of those changes, ecosystem shifts to your microbiome. So we basically make a virtual vegan you, like a digital twin of your microbiome going vegan. And then we make another virtual keto you and another gluten-free you and a you on metformin or on rapamycin or whatever it is. And based on all of these virtual yous, we can see the different shifts that would happen in your microbiome based on the studies. You know, we're not inventing anything. We're just reflecting the literature. We ask you what your health goals are, the health goals of your patient are. And based on those goals, whether it's to reduce bloating or abdominal pain, or maybe to lose weight or whatever it is, we help select those, you know, microbiome shifts, those virtual yous that are going to help achieve that goal. And by doing so, we can not only analyze what's going on today, but then build a custom action plan to help you leverage all of these studies to take actions that are going to move your microbiome in the right direction.
That's great. So you're not just telling people to eat fiber.
No, and eating fiber is great. And don't get me wrong, I think certainly studies show that people don't eat enough fiber. But the fact is, it's not one size fits all. Your microbiome and my microbiome, on average, we only share about 10%. And so the fact is that fiber is going to do something different for you than it is for me, because we're starting from a different place. And I think the only way that we're going to actually understand where you are and where I am is by looking. And then whether it's a lot of fiber or fiber plus something else, or maybe something else entirely to help you and me get to where we need to get to, it's not going to be a one size fits all solution.
Yeah. I think that's where what really is missing in this space is those granular customized suggestions. Cause I think, you know, for the last 5 to 7 years, it's just, you know, sort of defaulted that, you know, fiber, and lower saturated fat and avoid all these things. And it's kind of like, I just spent all this effort to get that information where it's kind of been like the default message. But it's really great to hear that you're creating, you know, sort of these different models of individualized recommendations.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine that's only going to get deeper and deeper.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's something also that a lot of people, there's a misconception out there, which is that, you know, they're good guys and bad guys, and that you want more good guys and you want to get rid of bad guys. And, you know, unfortunately, it's more complicated than that, right? It's like blood pressure, right? Blood pressure is not good or bad. You don't want it too high. You don't want it too low. You want a certain level. And you wouldn't say everyone should take blood pressure medication to lower their blood pressure without checking what it is in the first place. And so, you know, Acromancy, I think, is a really good example. Yeah, you know, Acromancy is being sold as a probiotic. It's certainly the case that there are a number of studies that have linked low Acromancia to a variety of health problems. At the same time, there are other studies that have linked really high Acromancia to Parkinson's disease and other issues. And so to say that everybody should be getting Acromancia without knowing where you're starting from is like saying everyone should be getting blood pressure medication without measuring somebody's blood pressure.
Right.
And to Leo's point, and he mentioned that you and I only overlap a small percentage of our microbiome. We've seen a lot of reports now. I've reviewed a lot of reports with different clients, and some people might have the same exact symptom. They're both struggling with bloating, but because they have a different microbiome signature or kind of match to that, their recommendations are completely different. Somebody might be recommended to take a certain vitamin, and somebody might be recommended to stop being lactose. And it's very dependent on what that person is. We also consider part of your diet right now as well. So for example, we ask if you're eating lactose and take that in consideration, just to make it a little bit more personalized as well in the report.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And you know, when the machine learning aspect goes out and pulls down data from referencing studies. So there's a lot in this profession, as far as the microbiome profession, there's been a lot of like inferences and associative data. And do you have a way of going into like ranking of the evidence to causative, you know, kind of causative correlations at this point? Or are we still in the associative inference stage? You know, for example, you know, saying like this particular population of microbes was abundant in your stool sample, and it's been linked to potentially causing this pathology or what have you, or linked to as a causative factor. Are we there yet, or are we still predating that?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the papers that we read, a lot of them are associated, right? They're not necessarily causal. Some of them are causal, so that comes into the model as well. But I like to think about it in a couple of ways. I mean, there's a lot of tests that we do where we find signatures of certain disease. If you think about occult blood, like the fecal blood test, that's an association or a kind of an instance or reference that it might be related to colon cancer. There are other elements or examples like that that are linked to certain diseases, and you get a lot of valuable information from it. It's not necessarily causal. So I think a lot of it has value in association, and we kind of use both for our model.
Yeah, and I think that example, Jacqueline, is a really good one, because, you know, fecal blood, occult blood, is a great test for colon cancer, but fecal blood's not causing colon cancer, and the treatment for colon cancer isn't to treat the bleed. And yet, at the same time, when you see that test positive, it's still really helpful to going out and getting an actual diagnosis and treatment, even though the treatment has nothing to do with the bleeding itself per se. So even associative studies with the microbiome can be extraordinarily helpful in trying to understand, you know, what's really going on at the root cause. And it ultimately, we don't have a clinical diagnostic right now based on the microbiome. But if you're seeing signatures that have been linked with Hashimoto's disease, for example, throughout a lot of different studies, well, then maybe you should go and test this person for Hashimoto's, right? Now, as far as how the AI works and deals with all of this, we have a two-tier ranking system within the AI. So We have an inclusion criteria. You can think of it as like a meta-analysis. We have an inclusion criteria where we only include papers that are peer-reviewed, reputable journals, human subjects, stool samples, sequencing, no culturing, subjects age 5 and older, et cetera, et cetera. And so we ignore, the AI ignores every paper that's not meeting these criteria. And then within the studies that do meet that criteria, we give each one a quality score, which is a function of the cohort size, the size of the study, and the quality of the journal it was published in. And so when we're matching the signatures in your microbiome to these different studies, we can basically give a weighted average across all of these different studies, where the weighting is defined by the quality of the study.
That's excellent.
Having those signatures are super helpful, because for providers, a lot of your clients and patients will come in saying you have abdominal pain, fatigue, and maybe bloating. That can be a lot of different conditions, and whether it's celiac or IBS or Crohn's, quite frankly. And so having this kind of snapshot of what they potentially look like, you can help maybe think about the next steps and what that treatment could look like.
To your point, you know, we've longed for like a signature and enterotype to explain this world of digestive patterns or this link to these disease processes or pathology processes. And so the fact of those enterotypes have kind of not been solidified yet, right? So I'm sure they are going to start to emerge with this kind of work.
Well, and we don't know. We really don't know. I mean, it's possible that these signatures are something like a liquid biopsy where, you know, ultimately you'll be able to diagnose somebody with enough work by looking at a microbiome signature. It's possible that these signatures are more like a BRCA gene, you know, the breast cancer gene, where no matter how many studies you do, you're not going to diagnose somebody with breast cancer by looking at a BRCA gene, right? But if somebody has an alteration in their BRCA gene, you just know that their risk profile is a lot higher for developing breast cancer. It's more likely to be aggressive. And so it'll never be a diagnosis, but it may still be useful clinical information. And I think with the microbiome, we don't know how ultimately we're going to, you know, this information is actually indicative of a current diagnosis, a current disease state, or whether it's more predictive and correlative with, you know, a higher risk factor. And I think, you know, my own personal suspicion is that it's not going to be one answer. You know, I think there'll probably be some diseases we'll be able to find a signature and ultimately diagnose somebody with that disease in the future. And for some signatures, we'll just say, hey, your risk factor is higher, your odds ratio is higher developing this disease, but we don't know that you have it yet.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Were you going to add something else, Jacqueline?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, for all the symptoms, we test many different symptoms and we tell you, we kind of break it down, like, you know, these are the ones you self-reported, like the ones that you care about. These are the ones that we found kind of that stronger signature, that strongest match. And then these are all the other ones. We give you the full list, whether it's kind of a lower signature match as well as a medium to high. And so if you go to your doctor and you're not really presenting with certain symptoms, but then 2 months from now, you start having severe anxiety, I think it's really cool and interesting to be able to go back to your report and say, did I have a signature for one of these symptoms that are now popping up later? It's kind of like a time capsule of what you have. And so because we have really detailed layers of information for each symptom and condition, you get this whole comprehensive view of yourself, whether you're experiencing it in that moment or not. And you can kind of refer back to it a month or two later if something kind of manifests later on.
That's a good point. Yeah. I like the term prodromal, kind of like when you can see a pattern before it, you know, fully manifests into the phenotype or like above the surface symptoms. So that's like a really good point that you make, just to be able to see what's coming or where your body's shifting, especially if it's following, you know, like a long period of being ill or, you know, some major changes in your life or travel or. Yeah. So I want to circle back on some of the shifts that we might be able to see in the microbiome, but kind of the other layer of data out there that I can't help but think would marry well with what you're doing is the metabolomics. And can you explain for people who don't know what that is, what it is, and just sort of your take on it for now?
So, as you know, when these microorganisms are presented with different nutrients, they process these nutrients and they create metabolites out of the back end. And these metabolites, some of these metabolites have been shown to be really important for health, things like short chain fatty acids, butyrate, acetate, so on. And there's a question within the scientific community, is it the organism that matters or is it the, you know, metabolites that they produce that matter? And so some people have advocated for just measuring the metabolites and saying, let's forget measuring the organisms at all. Let's only measure the metabolites. And you can do these metabolomics genomics through targeted panels, or you can do untargeted panels. And, you know, certainly it seems to be the case that some metabolites have an important role in health. You know, I think the way that we look at it is that it's not that one, you know, piece of information is more important than the other. They're really two sides of the same coin, right? You know, you're not going to produce these metabolites unless you know what, you know, if you don't have the right organisms. And if you have the right organisms, you're not feeding them the right way, they're not going to produce the metabolites either. But if you know the nutrients that are going in, you know the organisms that are there, you should have a pretty good handle on the metabolites that are being produced. And vice versa, if you know the organisms that are there, the metabolites, you should have some idea of what nutrients are coming in. So, you know, this is a continuous chain, and it's all part of, you know, similar, it's all part of one chain, right? So our view is that today, if we're trying to leverage the existing science is really connecting the ecosystem in your microbiome to a variety of different diseases or shifts based on different actions. Much less is known about the metabolites. And I think that there's certainly important science to be done there. But if we're really trying to take advantage of the science that we know today to understand root causes in a person's body and what we can do to shift them, there's just a lot more that we know about the gut microbiome. And this information is going to be highly related to the metabolites, especially if we understand the nutrients that are coming in.
Great. Yeah. So I'd like to kind of take one common clinical scenario maybe and just see your thoughts on what you've learned, because it pops up a lot and some people think it's over-touted. Other people think it's like the panacea. So this is like intestinal permeability. And, you know, is that something that you dive into with your tests?
Well, there have certainly been studies linking microbiome shifts to intestinal permeability or leaky gut, and that those studies are being, you know, read by our AI and incorporated into the analysis. The mechanisms behind which this permeability is happening, again, a lot of the science point back to the short chain fatty acids that we just discussed. We don't fully understand everything that's going on that's ultimately leading to this permeability. What we can say is that certain changes in your microbial ecosystem have been linked with intestinal permeability, and we report those. And as you know, intestinal permeability has been linked with a whole variety of different health challenges, you know, inflammation, infection, et cetera. So it certainly can be a serious condition, I think, you know, and you would know better than I do. The science is still evolving on how we understand it and treat it, but it definitely seems to be important. And insofar as we can see it through changes in the microbiome, we're able to detect that and provide it to the provider.
Yeah, I think there's a medication that's like in stage 3 trials right now from University of Massachusetts, I believe Dr. Fasano was behind it, that is touted to treat a portion of intestinal permeability called the zonulin receptor, zonulin function. So yeah, I think it's definitely something that people are looking to find out and see if they have it. And I mean, sometimes it's sort of implied that they have it based on a subset of symptoms or conditions they're dealing with. But yeah, it's definitely comes up in practice, you know, with all my GI cases, at least. So it's interesting that I love how you're sitting in a really good, responsible place. I really like that, because I think, you know, with technology, it could easily be, you know, sort of packaged in a way that we know more than we actually do. And to sit in that pocket of like responsibility and checks and balances is really comforting for me to hear. It sounds like that's a core value of what you're doing.
Yeah, core value is exactly how we talk about it internally. You know, the fact is that unfortunately there's a history within the microbiome world of sensationalism and, you know, likely snake oil salesmanship. And that's unfortunate, because the science is really there and really growing and is really meaningful. And we certainly don't know everything. There's certainly quite a bit left to uncover. At the same time, the literature is growing rapidly. The studies are growing rapidly. And there's a lot that we can say. And so we view our job as sticking very close to what's known, to providing all of that evidence, to telling you, you know, whether this is more established or whether this is much more preliminary, but really to be able to operationalize the complete literature in a way that is both comprehensive and systematic.
Wonderful. Yeah, a couple more questions, because I mean, this is just sort of my thing, so bear with me on this. I kind of want to go deeper a little bit with other discoveries that you're finding. So we had Dr. Ganoum on the podcast, who's a big fungome researcher out of the Cleveland area. And, you know, he really kind of talk about, you know, well, we know so much about bacteria and there's this whole other world that we need to kind of dive into. Are you going into levels of virome and fungome and the archaea? And is that part of the reference system?
100%. This is one of our motivations for doing shotgun metagenomics is because you see beyond bacteria. You see fungus, you see viruses, you see protists and archaea. And all of that is clearly important in your gut. Now, again, the science is more established in the bacterial realm. I think largely because 16S has been more accessible for longer, so more people have studied it. More and more studies are happening on fungus and yeast, and even there's work being done on viruses, the virome, and protists and archaea as well. At the end of the day, there's a lot to discover here, and we want to be not only where things are today, but where the puck is moving to in the future. So yes, we do take advantage of all of that literature. There's just less of it than there is in the bacterial world.
Wonderful. So Jacqueline, you're interfacing with clinicians and some of the public here. Any early insights on some cases you've heard or anything that you've heard back from folks about, you know, how they're doing with the test?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that surprises me is how many people, quite frankly, are suffering with some of the similar symptoms. I think if you look at some of our like demographics, 30 to 40% of them have bloating or gas or mental health challenges. So that was something that surprised me. I always like knew that, had a sense of that, but just seeing the data there of who we're reaching out to, there's clearly a need and a lot of people are suffering. I've also been like had people that I know that have been tested, and it's validating for me to see that a condition that they're struggling with or like talked about anecdotally shows up in their report or like it has a signature to it. So I'm like, I knew it. Like that's very validating for me to see. But yeah, I know people that said that I've lost weight on it. I know Leo has experiences as well with people and is close to him and his family that took the test and saw a lot of relief from there. I think everyone is different in their own way. We've been live since the fall, so we're newer to the scene, I would say, in terms of that. But we've gotten a lot of strong testimonials on the impact that it's making both for like the provider and the patient side and making their lives easier and better quality of life.
Excellent. And so the take home from the reports are not only dietary changes, lifestyle changes, but also probiotic, nutraceutical, vitamins. Is that how deep do you go in your recommendations?
Yeah, so we focus on food first, food and diet. And we do a lot of supplements, but again, we don't make supplements. We don't make these products. We're not identifying like brands right now. We're not saying, try this brand. We're saying certain probiotic strains or certain vitamins and letting the provider or the consumer kind of make those decisions. But yeah, there's also a lot of studies on lifestyle, even like certain exercise. I've seen a lot of papers on acupuncture as well. Seems to be a big impact on the microbiome. So that's one of the kind of the lifestyle incorporations. Yeah, intermittent fasting also comes through a lot. So that's the realm that we are operating right now with food, lifestyle, supplement changes.
Although there is a literature also on medication, and not only in terms of how medication can impact your microbiome, you know, whether it's aspirin or, you know, metformin or whatnot, but also that certain microbial states are predictive of how effective a drug is going to be, particularly in immuno-oncology drugs and biologics and GLP-1s. So there's actually a fair bit of literature on this to not only associate somebody's microbiome with drug response, but also how drugs are going to affect somebody's microbiome. Today, we're not providing that information, even though there's studies on it, because we want to be very careful about doing anything that might cause any kind of, you know, concern. And we want to just be careful in releasing that information. I think we will eventually provide that information to doctors and providers so that they'll have it as they go about, you know, figuring out how to manage to their patients.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's been really helpful just to even hear that when people are non-responders to certain medications that, you know, to kind of look at the microbiome for clues for why, and just to even know that that's a link has been really helpful. It'll be great to see where that grows for helping people with medication selection.
And a lot of people have symptoms when they're taking like GLP-1s. A lot of people stop because they're nauseous, they're having abdominal pain, all these types of issues. And so if you can kind of, you know, get ahead of that or rein those symptoms in either before or during medication, you potentially can last longer on that medication. It could have potential better outcomes and and more retention for the individual.
No wonder they don't feel like eating. It's not very pleasant. But yeah, I mean, those medications have been amazingly helpful for so many people. And it's nice when people can take them and tolerate them better. And, you know, so it's not coming with such a big cost of side effects. So that's really good to know that that's another link. And, you know, so I think I'd love to close out a little bit with a few practical aspects, just some quick hitter questions, and then kind of talking more about how to order the test and go from there. But personally, and just kind of your own take on the microbiome from a big picture perspective, what are some of the top disruptors? Like, how do people get into a place where their microbiome looks dysbiotic or, you know, doesn't look as balanced? Yeah. Like, what are some of the factors you see? And, you know, I think, I mean, I'll throw one in there that's just kind of well known, is like overuse of antibiotics can play a role. But beyond that, anything else you've learned and you're saying like, wow, this has some pretty good evidence to be a factor that we should really screen for?
I mean, one thing that comes to mind is just the westernized diet, honestly, in terms of the food that we have in this country, in the U.S., a lot of it's processed, a lot of different oils, different chemicals that are in it. So the food that we have now is a lot different than we used to have 20, 30, 40 years ago. So I think that this is a change of what that looks like, also is disrupting a lot of people's microbiome, as well as they're not getting like a diversity of different vegetables and fruits and other food groups because they're eating in a certain concentrated area that's, you know, higher sugar, higher fat, and more processed. That's just my general take. I'm curious, Leo, if you have any other ones to add. Antibiotics, obviously, for sure, that one as well. And I think people traveling and globalization, eating different things and potentially getting food poisoning probably does not help the microbiome as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ones that you both raised are certainly important. Processed foods, more and more evidence is showing that they just disrupt some of the nutrients that the microbiome needs and can really, you know, cause shifts there that you don't want. Some of the surprising studies have also looked at emulsifiers and preservatives too, and the effects of those on the microbiome, artificial sweeteners, and all of that. But there are a lot of ways that things can go wrong. You know, it's not just antibiotics. A lot of times people come off chemo and cancer therapy and they beat the cancer, but then they ultimately end up with GI issues because the chemo has really affected their gut. People who are on serious drug addiction, opioid addiction, many times, even though they can get off of these drugs, their microbiome has been destroyed through the use of them. Certain infections can cause disruptions in your microbiome. I mean, everything from a salmonella food poisoning type infection, but we know that there's post-infection IBS, and, you know, we're seeing people with long COVID. You know, you have these situations with like pandas and pans where someone will get an infection and it can dramatically change not only their microbiome, but the rest of their health. So there are those sorts of examples as well. You know, there's some really interesting studies that have looked at the proximity of humans to animals over time and shown that as people have had less connection with animals and been living in a more, you know, cleaner, bubble-fied world, that it actually seems to have a negative effect on their microbiome as well. There's a really interesting study in Ireland about the travelers, the tinkers, and how, you know, despite poor diets and so on, the hypothesis seemed to be that they had pretty decent health because of their proximity to animals. And we know that dogs can affect your microbiome in a good way and cats to a lesser degree, but certainly like the introduction of pets. So there are a lot of factors that go into it. And even if you're eating healthy and not getting cancer and not addicted to opioids, you know, you can still have shifts that happen due to environmental changes or travel or whatnot. And so, and ultimately, this is a core pillar of your health.
That's awesome. I own a tortoise. I don't know if that's helping me, though.
Oh, that's interesting. I haven't seen any studies on that.
Yeah.
I don't know. They eat a lot of lettuce, so I'm sure there's something good going on there. Well, cool. And yeah, I'd say that it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, when if fecal transplant really comes on the scene, you know, what level of criteria we're looking for donors and screening for healthy donors and how many boxes they check of things that we mention, because it's, you know, all these disruptors and to get a good donor is so essential.
I mean, I think ultimately we're going to get to a point where we understand the microbiome well enough that we'll be able to engineer it into a desired state without having to pass through a fecal transplant. I don't know how long that's going to take. Certainly in the meantime, there are banks and all that are doing good work and trying to screen donors and make that kind of material available. And certainly now we have an FDA-approved therapeutic in the form of fecal transplant for recurrent C. diff.
Well, great. So we've covered a lot, and I really appreciate you being on here. And just to wrap up, what's kind of the process of ordering Jonah, and what's the next steps if someone's listening to this and they're really interested in kind of pursuing it? What would they do?
Yeah. So there's kind of two sides. So if you're a consumer, you can go to our website, jonah.health, and go to the product page and order directly on that. So pretty simple. And then once you do, you'll get an email about your confirmation and emails along the way. And then you'll be sent a kit next business day. You'll be shipped out a kit to your home, the address that you put in, and it'll ask you to register your barcode and activate and create your account and fill out that health survey or that intake. Send the sample back to us. And then once we get it into the lab, it takes about 3 weeks, I would say, for the report to be generated. From the provider side, we have a providers page on our website. You can fill out the form if you're interested in partnering with us. We have a separate provider product and a portal that you can access where you can invite your clients. You can manage your different clients and the different reports, be able to look at the report first and understand the complexities of it. So there's different sides of the coin. So if you're interested on both sides, you could either go to the provider page if you want to work with us from that side of the coin, or if you're a consumer and want to try out yourself, you can go to jonah.health.
You could also always email us at hello@jonah.health.
Excellent. And then there's a partnership in place with Emerson Ecologics, I guess. So for providers that are already linked up with Emerson, I think they're going to be able to order tests through there. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're excited to announce a partnership with Emerson and Fullscript. So our product, our microbiome profiling kit and AI interpretation is on the Emerson platform right now, and it's under the lab test catalog. So super excited to be able to offer that to all their different providers and practitioners.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, those things that people are already using is always helpful because that's like one less process to learn. So that's good. Yeah. Well, thank you for being here. This has really been very interesting and educational. And thank you for taking such a responsible approach to this world. It's refreshing for me, for someone who's been ordering these kind of stool tests for nearly 20 years now. So it's just really refreshing. I signed up, so I'm looking forward to getting started with helping patients through this.
And I know, Adam, you mentioned this is your 100th episode. So
yes.
In honor of that, we have a promo code for all the listeners. So it's one thing 100. So
oh, nice.
You can put that into a product page on the coupon code and it should reduce it by $100.
Oh, we appreciate that. Thank you so much. All right. Well, I'd love to connect with you down the road when we're further along and learn more things together.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Adam.
Great.
You're welcome.
It's a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of the One Thing Podcast. Please share these episodes with your friends, loved ones, colleagues, patients, healthcare providers, anyone who you feel might benefit from hearing these informative interviews. We tend to learn best from people sharing things with us. That's often the first time it's introduced. So don't hesitate if the content of these episodes reminded you of someone that might benefit from it. Forward the episode to them, and I'm sure they'll either appreciate it or be appreciative that you've thought of them. So once again, we'll look forward to seeing you next episode on the One Thing Podcast. And again, much appreciation for you being here with me.